Thank you. Honorable members, our support staff, the committee secretary, the Connect advisor, the researcher, and our admin support, Ms. Khadija and Ms. Tabi, the members of the media, all those that are listening and watching our committee today, good morning. It has been a year. Really, it has been a year. Honorable Hicklin just said we're not only tired or having fatigue, but also COVID-19 fatigue. When you know that someone that you know has contracted the virus, you are always in a panic state. You always don't know what to do. It really has been a year, and it shows that it's not yet over. Each day we're losing those that we know, those that we love, through this deadly virus that is the COVID-19. Let's stay safe. Let's stay indoors. I believe that this second wave is more brutal even than the first wave. With those few words, honorable members, I welcome you in this meeting, in which we will be dealing with the budgetary review and recommendation report, the BRRR, having interacted with the reports that have been given by the department, the Auditor General's report. Then we have to formulate our own reports. Though I'm not sure when we're going to mini plenaries in which to discuss this, I think Nola at the end of the meeting will take us through. But now we're going to discuss our own report. We'll then invite, I'm not sure whether it's going to be Shoaib who's going to present, and then we'll go to it. But Shoaib, you may not go line by line. You can just talk to the report. But when you come to the findings and the recommendations, on that one, you can't talk to the report. You have to go line by line, because that's where we're focusing on as this committee. You are welcome again, honorable members. Thank you. Do we have any apologies, Ms. Martinison?
Yes, Chair. Good morning to yourself, honorable members, and my colleagues. We've got a couple of apologies. One from Honorable Mashele, he's still on study leave. I think Honorable Matebula as well is still on study leave. And then there's Honorable Sirisa, who's attending a meeting at her headquarters. And the last one is Honorable Van Staden, who's attending another meeting. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. As long as we are correcting, so we'll continue. And then who's going to present the report? Is it Mr. Denzin?
Yes, Shoaib.
Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Shoaib.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. I think before we start, we just need to echo the voices of people this morning speaking of how difficult the year was. But also we need to just keep in mind those that we lost and those that are not well. We are thinking of them as we are going through this report, because their work is in here as well. Chairperson, I'm going to share the screen and follow your guidance to not go line by line, but there are a few sections where we will pause and we will just say a few things about it. But certainly, findings and observations to the end of the report, as well as the recommendations, we will go line by line and we will make amendments as members instruct. I'm just sharing the screen, Chair. Can I get an indication whether that is visible?
It is,
yes.
Okay, I'm going to make it slightly bigger. Is that...
Right.
Chairperson and honourable members, what we have in front of us is just the introductory part, and I will skip most of that because there is a standard, few standard sections that we'll have at the beginning. The importance here is just that we should note, and yesterday Nola and myself was made aware of this, that this particular date that I just highlighted is always, we need to keep in mind that Parliament also gets audited, and that date is an important date for the for our internal as well as the Auditor General's office when it does auditing of Parliament, because the work of this committee is crucial for Parliament to also check on whether it is giving effect to the constitutional obligations before it. This committee actually does major part of that, as do all other committees. So Chairperson, I'll then move to just highlight the actual bill, not the bill, the actual act that guides the work of the committee in terms of oversight over planning documents, oversight over the budgetary allocations to the programs, and oversight over whether these and how these were effected by the department. That's the Money Bills Amendment and Related Matters Act 9 of 2009, and specifically Section 9. We will not repeat it. We've gone through this a number of times. Chair, so we are done with page one, and we'll move very quickly to, we'll not do the mandate again, Chairperson, of this committee. The mandate is pretty straightforward. The mandate of the department and the PMTE, pretty straightforward. We do know those, and it got repeated in yesterday's meeting as well. The acts guiding the department being a portion of the Constitution, the GIAMA, the Infrastructure Development Act, which is new. Let me just say something about this, Chair. The Infrastructure Development Act and the budgetary allocation to the infrastructure South Africa will be dealt with in the following financial year, because from April this year only that allocated amount kicked in, which is in the 2020-2021 financial year. So we will deal with that in the next financial year. These are the other acts, and then, Chairperson, the policy texts that should strengthen the mandates of the department, the PMT, and the public work entities. These are listed here. What is highlighted in yellow, Chairperson, I just want to read or say something about it. Our department is not directly involved in service delivery. This particular department is a regulatory and a coordinating department. As it provides accommodation and maintenance services, it does not do it itself. It contracts with other private construction companies and professional built environment companies to do these things. So it's very much a regulatory and a coordinating department, but you can hear that in performing the work and spending the money of government, it goes into contract with service providers from outside. It's a major contracting department. And as we have heard over the last few months and yesterday specifically, there are serious weaknesses when it comes to that. The oversight function, I want to say a few, I wanted to say a few things about, Chair. We do oversight over the minister. And here I'm speaking straight from the Public Finance Management Act. This act makes a distinction between the functions of the minister and the DG. Where the minister, and I'm quoting, is responsible for policy matters and outcomes. This includes seeking parliamentary approval and adoption of the department's budget. The head official, or director general, is responsible for outputs and implementation and is accountable to Parliament for the management of the implementation of the budget. I'm going to repeat this, Chair. So you can see the distinction between the ministers, our role over our oversight over the minister and our oversight over the DG and the administration. The minister is responsible for policy matters and outcomes, including seeking approval for the budget, while the DG is responsible for output and implementation and is accountable to us for the management and implementation of the budget. The accounting officer must report to Parliament on how the department uses the budgetary allocation to translate policy into programs, implementable programs. The DG reports to different levels of oversight to whom he or she is accountable. And the levels are the following, Chair and Honourable Members. When a minister is instructed or requested to, an MP is requested to become a minister, the person appoints advisors and support staff in her office or in his office. Those people act on behalf of the minister. So what I read earlier on about the minister being responsible for policy means those people are also responsible for that. And so the office of the minister, the DG, the office of the minister does oversight, and because the minister's office is the first level of oversight over the DG and the DDGs. Our committee, this committee, functions as the second level of oversight, and the Auditor General as the third level of oversight. And we use the expertise of AGSA to, like we did yesterday, to deliberate on matters that may need our attention as part of our oversight function. Now, we need to just look at the different components of our oversight focus. Our oversight focus is firstly, therefore, on how the minister functions as a policy leader. Whether and how the minister directed the DG and DDGs and all those directors, chief directors and directors and assistant directors under everyone, administers, researches, reviews and drafts policy and regulation that may be required to give effect to the mandate of public works. Now remember, I said earlier on, the mandate is really that of a coordinating and regulating department. The second focus of our oversight is on how policy needs were translated into programs. In other words, how does the DG and his admin team implement using the budget? That is described in the APP and the 5-year strategic plan. That APP consists of and includes very important information. Those are the predetermined objectives with performance targets and KPIs that should be reached within stipulated time frames to keep a check on where the targets are reached. The third focus is on whether and how the minister guided the DG and the administration team to develop uniform standards for implementation and regulated the implementation of these standards across the sector of public works. That means the department, PMTE, and all entities. We keep a check on how the minister does the first level of oversight. In other words, in-year reports, monthly reports, quarterly performance reports, and that's why we ask for the quarterly performance reports, to check on how reporting took place to the minister and her office and whether she or he acted on consequence management. So where we said something's weak, did he or she act on it and fix it? And I must say, Chair, that we need to keep attention on how the Auditor General's office, and members may, if they want to, have a look at that again and see how the Auditor General's office refers to the oversight that this committee does as assisting the Auditor General as well. You would also remember, Chair, in the report yesterday, there was a whole list of how we, in our meetings, highlighted to the departments their weaknesses, and that's what we're referring to here. So in short, Chairperson, we keep the minister as leader of the sector responsible for the use of budgetary and human resources to ensure optimal performance of the DG and the administrative team. Now, quickly, the evidence that we used the five-year strategic plan and the revised strategic plan, I must say, I think that's a mistake there. I must just take this revised strategic plan out here, Chairperson. That's in reference to a previous financial year. Apologies for that. The five-year strategic plan and the annual performance plan for this year is the one source document. The quarterly performance report and on the 1st and 2nd, which we considered on the 21st of November 2019, and the third quarter performance considered on the 4th of March this year, for this financial year. And those reports are reports that come to us as stipulated in Section 32 of the PFMA. And then we also use our oversight events. That's every committee meeting, as well as oversight visits that we did. In fact, sometimes even interactions between a DG and a minister in a chairperson's office might count as these. We did not have any of those yet, but we may use that as well in future years. But I must just highlight here that we did something this November, which is what I'm highlighting now, October and November. October we did quarterly performance report, and in November this year we took the extra step of checking on low expenditure rates that we picked up in the quarterly performance reports. And that's the low expenditure rates on compensation of employees and goods and services. I will insert that later before we send the report for processing, as well as the growing debt on the part of the PMTE. And then later on yesterday in our meeting, we did work on the audited financial statements, annual financial statements, as in the annual report. The rest of the report, the third section, deals with the alignment of legal mandate and planned initiatives in the planning document. That's the alignment of those KPIs to the administration of and the use of the budgets. There is a bit of a reflection of 20 June 2019, the infrastructure component, but as I indicated earlier on, that will form a big part of that will form, will be dealt with in next year's BRRR. I'm just moving to the next section, Chairperson. We are on page, I think this is page 11. Chair, what I'm doing here is summarizing the analysis of the usefulness of the planning document, which section 3 started with. But what I'm saying, before we do the proper summarizing, I think it's important that we have a look at the list of matters of concern regarding the performance of the department that has been problematic over the past 5 years, 2014 to 2019, and that continues to be a problem. Chair, these are the matters that members may recall also were raised yesterday. I'm not going through every line here, I'll just highlight each and mention each one. The first one is the immovable asset register was incomplete, and the PMTE could not confirm a complete, accurate and valid recording of specific items, which I'm not going to go through. Secondly, there was a problem over 2014 to 19 with leasing, a lack of reconciliations, inaccuracies between what was on the property management information system and actual lease agreements. And here's that issue of contracting being a major part of this department's business. There was a lack in supply chain management of compliance with regulation and legislation. That caused irregular expenditure. No proper system existed to detect and disclose annual financial statements. These are things that were there all the time, and consequence management, a lack of action against transgressions and no consequence management was an issue. System of record keeping, weak. Commitments, those are commitments where there was an inability to supply evidence on contract pricing adjustments, provisions that were calculated by consultants. The PMTE lacked a proper accrual accounting system. The Auditor General did refer in this year that it was improved, but that there was a lack of staff, and she was, the Auditor General's, the colleague from the Auditor General was very clear, very specific. She actually referred to a lack of chartered accountants in the body of administration staff of the PMTE and the department, and as well as in the regional offices. I recall her saying there were only two. Now, that means that your accrual accounting system that must be implemented for the PMTE to work properly is implemented weekly. That was 2014 to 19. The business case of the PMTE remained incomplete. There was material underspending, predetermined objectives. There was a lack of understanding of the framework of for managing program performance information. Some of the KPIs was not stated and defined smartly according to the SMART principles, which led to EPWP audit opinions, and again inadequate compliance with the PFME, and risk management was weak in spite of the creation of a governance, risk and compliance branch. Now, I think, Chair, we need to also reflect on the 2011 to 2019 turnaround strategy and its effects. And I will just list three things here. Well, it says two features that emerge, but there's a third one as well that's mentioned. The operationalization of the PMTE. There were issues that caused the department to always get extremely adverse audit opinions, really, really a lot of material misstatements, etc. Now, since the PMP was operationalized, these problems were shifted to the PMT, from the department to the PMT. So the department got better audit opinions, while most of the problems are now sitting with the PMTE. But the first effect of the turnaround was the operationalization of the PMTE. The second was marked improvements across both DPWI and PMTE. But of course, there's still a problem with the KPI for Program 3 that's related to functions of the EPWP. The KPI basically is stated as and defined as if the issue lies within the control of the department, while it does not. It lies in control of the provinces and the municipalities, and you can't test yourself and have that as an indicator if it's not lying in your control. There's a problem in the immovable asset registers compilation and the difficulties when it comes to ensuring that what's on the register is in fact so materially. And then the third thing that I think is important to remember about that period and the turnaround strategy is that the governance, risk and compliance branch was created, and it assisted through proactive work to improve the fight against malpractice and weak compliance with the PFMA and Treasury regulations. It collaborated with the SIU to deal with several instances of corruption and malpractice, etc. Now, Chair, I just want to say something that members may want to make a note of when it comes to governance, risk and compliance and SIU investigations. I want to say that sometimes when we are successful in one thing, it has a knock-on effect in an unexpected way elsewhere. Some of the investigations and some of the in fighting malpractice and malfeasance and corruption, it must be noted that because of that, a number of staff either left the department, are on suspension, and they are are very often in supply chain management, financial management, but also senior management. And so the knock-on effect and the unexpected and unintended consequence of tight governance, risk and compliance is that you may weaken leadership in specific parts of the department. So we just need to keep that in mind. But that is in the purview of the minister to have the foresight that it might happen and then to put proper systems in place to deal with it, both the minister and the DG. Now, this is a summary on the planning documents. And it's a finding practically. The planning document provided detail on efforts to support client departments across the three spheres of government. However, matters needed to be correctly addressed to sort out problems with how KPIs are stated, or sorry, were stated, and how in-year reporting that assists with financial management control is complied with as per the BFMA. We should also note that the analysis of the effect of the infrastructure component, as I said, will be properly dealt with in 2020 to 2021 financial year. So we turn now, Chair, to the performance of the department. And I just want to list a few things that we found in our engagement with the first, second, and third quarter performance report of the department and the PMP. Firstly, Chair and Honourable Members, there was insufficient response from the market for procurement spent for bids awarded to designated groups. That's the Supply Chain Management Program 1 in the first quarter that we found. There was a lack of available business representatives for condition assessment module as per the Enterprise Resource Plan implementation plan for program one. I need to say, I list this because I need to say something about the ERP. Chair, this is what the minister referred to as Archibus. The Archibus assists the department with getting the immovable asset register properly updated. The AG found that there was improvement in that this immovable asset register is now better controlled with a software system. But this number two refers to that. Chair, I'm not going to go through every single one, but those were important things. And then the issue of number four, the department discontinuing the setting up of the academy due to financial constraints in professional services in program two, and then the target for work opportunities EPWP, youth and women delays in the finalization of legal verification. That is the IDP with the non-state sector NGOs, Chair. We did quite a bit of work on this in the next, if we do our annual report, the committee's annual report, we'll have to refer to this number five and the positive outcomes that we reached as a committee there. It's not relevant for the BRRR because it's a different act that we are giving effect to. So Chairperson might want us to say something about it, maybe in the annual report, but not here. The process then also, number six, and this is directly linked to our oversight over the minister as policy leader. The process on the development of the Public Works Bill, this is, as the department explained it, affected negatively by the transition from fifth to sixth administration. Here we say the matter may require updating. The minister and the department made it clear that program four would be impacted more by the infrastructure component, which we then foresee that this may further delay the review of White Papers 97 and 99 and the draft Public Works Bill. We'll say a bit more about this in findings as well as in the recommendations. This is a rehash, Chairperson, of the first few points that I made. This continued delays of the ERP that impacts not only the immovable asset register but also the financial administration and management. In the case of the EPWP, it also affects the system with which they validate beneficiaries and the numbers of work opportunities created from municipalities and provinces, and then it has a knock-on effect, of course, on the grants that should be paid out. I'm not going to speak about White Paper 1 and 2 right now again, Chair, but we move to the analysis of the budget and annual financial statements. Not going to say much about this. This is the reason why we sent the report early to members. So if members want to raise anything, they may do so and we will respond. But we'll page past this pretty quickly. Just bear with me, Chairperson. There we go. I want to say something, Chairperson, on the audit opinion on the annual financial statement from the Auditor General, which will then later impact on our findings, observations, as well as our recommendations. The Department receives an unqualified opinion, audit opinion, with emphasis of matters and additional matters for 15-16, 16-17, 17-18, 18-19, and for this fifth consecutive year, an unqualified audit opinion. The committee must just keep in mind that this relates directly to what I mentioned earlier on. The effect of the turnaround strategy 2011 to 2019 was that the PMTE became the implementing arm of the department. So all the negative audit issues have been moved to the PMTE, and the department is able to get an audit, qualified audit. Here's a list of issues, Chair, highlighted by the AG, and it's useful for members to just keep in mind what I mentioned. The 2014 to 19 issues that stood out and remained outstanding. And some of them will continue here. This will then indicate, if it is the case that the things are repeated, it will indicate, Chairperson, that consequence management and the action plan to fix these things did not have the required effect. The AG commended the PMTE, number one, for resolving prior year qualifications on properties recorded in its books. In the past, it didn't have title deeds as proof of ownership. Now, because they are using the archivist properly, it's assisting. There's been improvement in having deeds, title deeds, as proof of ownership. The problem is that there's a recurrence of qualification on assets under construction being expensed as opposed to capitalized and recorded in the asset register, which was resolved in 1819. It's now unfortunately recurring in this year. Now, this is what was mentioned as the issue of contracts and leasing, that the validation of information that exists materially on the ground does not reflect on the books of the PMTE. So that the PMTE may then pay for assets that is still not on the books, or the other way around. The movable asset register remain incomplete. Now, this is in spite of the department will always tell you, no, it's complete. Reality is that the asset register is not complete. Efforts to determine how many properties there are that government owns and should be on the immovable asset register, and especially what the value of these are, remain unresolved. And yesterday there was a good explanation of what the crisis is. The crisis is that it will cost an enormous amount of money to do an independent valuation of the properties. Therefore, the department relies on municipal valuation. And because it depends on municipal valuation, the value will always be an issue. So source data is not used correctly in calculating the value of assets. The AG was, however, pleased to note that the PMTE moved from manual processes to computerized systems for record keeping of over 2,457 leases. Due to inadequate review processes of the information that was migrated, numerous errors were identified where information on the system did not agree to actual lease agreements. It resulted in a qualification, this is a new qualification, which affected revenue and expenditure from leases. And in addition, internal control systems of processing, reviewing, and approving lease payments were not done adequately to prevent overpayments made to landlords. Furthermore, the PMTE has 714 leases that are running on a month-to-month, which could lead to a missed opportunity of savings that could be realized on renegotiated contracts. Chair, honorable members, this is a very important issue. This is really the issue of, it's not just value for money that we are talking about here, but the DG and the administrative team has the responsibility of ensuring that state money is not wasted. As soon as state money is wasted, and it is found that you did not take adequate steps to prevent the wastage, then the administration is wanting. This matter of month-to-month leases, where if leases were properly monitored and controlled and checked on and timeously renegotiated and money could be saved, that matter is serious. The audit of the department itself, the AG stated laws and prescripts were compromised in procurement of goods and services, and this resulted in irregular and fruitless expenditure, poor contract management, and then internal controls and action plans around performance information were not effective in ensuring that the set targets for construction project management are achieved and reported correctly. All those matters that I raised there were responded to by each of the DDGs and chief directors. The other matters that were raised were a lack of supporting evidence to confirm the stated performance targets. This is an old issue that I referred to earlier on, and then the AG, because of those things, could not determine if the achievement of 994,699 very close to 1 million work opportunities, as reported in the EPWPRS by public bodies, required further adjustments. And then percentage targets for vulnerable groups. The AG could not determine whether the percentage of EPWP participation for women, youth, and people with disabilities as reported required further adjustments. When it says it could not determine whether it required further adjustments, what it means is it seems as if there are errors there, and that was not picked up by the administration. The achievement of planned targets as per the APP for this year should be considered in the context of material findings on the usefulness and reliability of the reported performance that is stated in paragraph 17 of the AG's report. And then on expenditure management, this is serious, and it's a recurring issue. Effective and appropriate steps to prevent regular expenditure. Both the leases that I referred to earlier on is part of this, but the AG indicated that the value was not complete, as the management was still in the process of quantifying the full extent of the regular expenditure. This is also a matter that was raised. Then the issue of the Program 5, that's the matter in the annual financial statement related to the state funerals, where payments were made in excess of the contracted amounts. There's also, Chairperson, effective and internal controls. You will recall all these from what I said happened in 2014-19. They were not in place. Internal control deficiencies. Department is impacted on a number of investigations. I referred to this, and I said to the members that this is the unintended consequences, where you want to fight corruption, you want to fight weak systems that may give rise to malpractice and malfeasance, but then it has the knock-on effect of senior management positions being vacant, lots of acting positions in senior and very, very important branches. I just want to actually, I grab the page now to just mention the acting.
May I interrupt you? Excuse me, Chair. You've left a D out in the last sentence. Similar findings on Program 3.
Got it, ma'am. Thank you. The acting positions, and I'm just wanting you to read the branches. Governance, Risk and Compliance as an acting DDG. Expanded Public Works as an acting DDG. Now, I'll just stop there. These are both branches that are crucially mentioned in the audit findings. Construction Policy Research and Regulation. If we look at the performance of this branch 4, it's an acting DDG since before this committee got its life. This branch could not perform and could not review the white papers and give us a public works bill. The performance targets, zero was achieved in this financial year. Acting DDG Real Estate Management Services, REMS, seriously involved when it comes to leases. And then acting DDG for projects management as well as for intergovernmental relations. Those are very crucial branches and sub-branches of the department. So this combination of instability in leadership and the lack of effective leadership culture contributes to irregular expenditure and weaknesses for this department. Inadequate monitoring of action plans. These are action plans that had to deal with consequence management. You can say the action plan is there, and you will notice in our recommendation now we will have one of the recommendations or two or three of them saying we want action plans, we want a report on this. The reality is it shouldn't be a report to this committee. By the time the report comes to the committee, there should have been several monthly and weekly meetings of the department, with minutes of the department, showing how it dealt and how it monitored the action plans to address the previous year's negative findings for both the EPWP and the DMT. This is similar, this bullet at the top there, the one that I'm just pointing to now, is similar. And then material irregularities was picked up, and the AG indicates that it's not completed with that. It didn't complete that process, but we'll report on it in next year's auditor's report. It should be in our report here because we need to keep a check on that. Then this is mention of the ongoing investigations. I'm not going to go through that. I spoke to the effects of that. Chair, I'm not going to go through the entities. Safe to say that I think we need to say something about the IDT, and just a short notice will be inserted here when it comes to the IDT. We need to just notice that the reason why I'm jumping over this comfortably is because this year we could not listen to them much, but we included them in this section above on the Auditor General's opinions. I'm just trying to, oh no, that is not important. Jefferson, I'm moving quickly to to our findings and observations. I think on page 45, for members who want to follow on their own document, on page 45, section 7, we list findings and observations, and it's going to be, I want to be quiet soon, so that I can take notes of what needs to be added as members gave input. Chair, just to say that once I'm done here, I'm not going to answer any questions. What we would like, Chair, in this session is for the members to own the report in terms of findings and recommendations, findings and observations and recommendations, and that we then alter what I'm putting in front of the members here. this should not be 7. Yeah, I just want to take this away. The outcome of the analysis of our performance of the DPWI, and I just want to put in here, and PMTE, are as follows. Key matters that stand out is underperformance and under-expenditure of the appropriated budget. The department achieved 50% roughly of its 36 targets. It spent 7.76 billion of the 7.91 billion allocated, and there's been an under-expenditure of 146.8 million. The reason why we picked this type of under-expenditure up from quarter one to quarter three, and that's why we asked them to come and speak about the trend on underspending for compensation of employees, as well as goods and services. And some of the under-expenditure is explained there. Here, we are not looking at explanations, we are just listing the weaknesses. The second one is the leadership instability, which falls under human resource management. Chairperson, it might sound strange what I said earlier on about the knock-on effect, the unintended consequence of fighting corruption, and then having people suspended, as well as people leaving once they are suspended as well, and then you're having to sit with a number of acting positions in senior or in senior management. The reason why I say that it might sound strange as I say that that is an unintended consequence is I say it because it shouldn't be an unintended consequence. So that when you do have a risk and compliance branch, you should have chief directors under DDGs when they take over as acting DDGs. They are fully aware of what is going on. There is in the PFMA a whole set of dates per month when reports, monitoring reports, must be given from the directors to chief directors. Chief directors report to the DDGs and to the DG, and once a month meetings with the minister. Therefore, Chair, when somebody is suspended, the work of that branch and the work of the department cannot slow down. And so therefore, when we say acting DDG, it shouldn't be that somebody is in an acting position for 2 years. It should be processed quicker. That's what we are saying here. So leadership instability is not necessary. It cannot be that it becomes a weakness and that it becomes the reason given for. That's the reason why we have inadequate monitoring of compliance. That's the reason why procurement and contract management is weak and expenditure management is not under control and monitored. The risk of malpractice and corruption, ongoing investigations, this is related to the previous one. Irregular expenditure, 190.9 million. It's stated in note 25 of the AFS. The AG reports this as remaining incomplete. The department reported that senior management was in the process of quantifying the full extent of this irregular expenditure. They speak of 83.9 million under note 25.2, which details current and prior year. This is a really prior year irregular expenditure. It's still under investigation. An additional 6.3 million from 2018-19 financial year was a prior error. So it was reported incorrectly, apparently, as irregular expenditure. This has been corrected. A determination test was conducted on procurement processes in terms of Treasury Instruction Note 2 of 2019-20. So the majority of the irregular expenditure disclosed in this year's AFS was caused by expenditure on state funerals. So a huge portion of the regular expenditure stated should be disregarded, and in the next financial year it will be clearer. So the amount of irregular expenditure outstanding would then just be state funerals. And this, honourable members will know, is an issue I just left out the R from matter there, is an issue that is under investigation and is the reason for the DG being under suspension. Risk to operating as a going concern. The AG included a note on this following the audit report. And this is the possibility that this department might cease to be a going concern given certain financial and material conditions. Chair, this relates to the manner in which the DPWI, so remember PMTE and DPWI uses shared supply chain management services. So the financial accounting and financial monitoring is shared. So the leases that's not properly managed and other matters like the non-collection of debt by the PMTE from service departments, client departments, that is impacting on the DPWI as well, and that if we are serious about this department and it's not going to get its books in order, that is a matter. The sixth matter that we note is the impact of the virus National Disaster Intervention Plan on the financial statement. The department's role was to provide accommodation for the quarantine sites to health department and the mobilization of EPWP in public health care services. We note this because the specifically the EPWP participants was appointed very late, and we don't know whether that was really whether the expenditure of money there really resulted in value for money. Now, it might not seem like it because the heading is on the other side there, but we are at recommendations, Chair. And the recommendations is very much what Chairperson and the committee members yesterday listed as issues that the Minister would have to effect. We say that the committee recommends, for now, these are the draft recommendations, that the minister must ensure that the department reports to it in each of the quality performance reports on the following. Number one, the recruitment project to get the correct capacity in the department and the PMTE to ensure clean governance and an improved PMTE to manage the immovable asset register, leases and contracts. Number two, a report on the change management and clean audit plan to, within the next financial year, strengthen the weaknesses in the control, compliance and risk environment of the department and the PMTE to get a clean audit. Number three, a full update on the processes that the real estate investment services follow, I should say plan to follow, on a monthly basis to keep the immovable asset register updated. This should indicate the functions of each of the staff that are involved in each regional office. Fourthly, progress with the project to get phase one of the Telkom towers completed. So that the 10 leases for the South African Police Services can be released. Fifth, progress with the consequence management and action plan to deal with the overpayments on leases amounting to 21 million. Recall also, Chair, that those overpayments may also have further investigations coming. A report on efforts of the construction policy, research and regulation program, that's program four, to strengthen the public works mandate by getting the public works bill completed within the sixth administration. Seven, a report on the work that the Construction Policy Research and Regulation Program, again Program 4, is doing with the CIDB and CBE to get the Construction Industry and Professional Built Environment Act amended to drive transformation. Now, Chair, these two 6 and 7 relates to, number 6 relates to the review of the white paper dated 97, and 7 relates to the review of white paper dated 99. And perhaps we should insert these words here to drive transformation in the construction and professional built environment, or built environment professions. I'll change it appropriately as I can type better when members speak just now. And 8, a full report on developments to deal with the money paid to the contractor for the Bay Bridge project. We heard too many things contrary to what we heard initially, that there was a process on the way to get this sorted out. I think there was sort of information provided yesterday. If members remember, they can remind us and we can clear that up. 9, a full report on how the PMTE is capacitating each regional office and the head office to manage contracts and leases. I suspect that number 9 is already dealt with a previous recommendation, but we can clean that up as members guide us just now. Chairperson, that is the report. It's 9:58. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Shreem, for such a detailed presentation. We have received this last night, the updated report. I'm then now inviting members or any... no, there are no additions yet. I'm inviting members, in fact, I think all members have to discuss on this one. Honorable Graham Mare, I can see your hand. You are going to be followed by Honorable Numalo, followed by Honorable Kopane, followed by Honorable Kalvik, Honorable Trink, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Jobo. I'm just mentioning those that are here. I've seen that Honorable Muimang has joined us. I think he's just here to observe. The chairperson of the select committee from the NCOP is here. I've indicated that everyone is going to speak, honorable members, on this report because it is our report. Then Honorable Graham Murray, you are the one who's going to start. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm sorry I couldn't participate yesterday, but I'm feeling a lot better today, which helps. First of all, Chair, I'd just like to commend again our support staff on an incredible job done. I mean, they've had very little time to prepare all of this, and they've put together an exceptional report, which I do think encapsulates a lot of what was discussed yesterday. One of my concerns about the report we got yesterday from the Auditor General, and it's a bit bizarre to me, was there was quite a lot of focus on the COVID crisis. So there was quite a lot of indication of you know, misspending, et cetera, et cetera, on the Bay Bridge saga and on the quarantine sites. But my concern is that neither of those actually really fall within this review period, because if you recall, the Bay Bridge, the first payment was actually made, as far as I can recall, in April, which means it falls outside of the period under which we are reviewing everything, and none of the quarantine sites really kicked in until April. Because we only went into lockdown at the end of March. So I think we're going to have to be very careful not to shift focus too much to that side of things for this period, and not to forget about it in the next period, because I think that's when we're going to have to really interrogate what happened on the quarantine sites and on the Bay Bridge washing line. So I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact that there were a whole lot of other issues. One of the big issues around EPWP was that on the non-state sector EPWP program, and again, what happened with IDT is we were not, I don't know if you recall, the meeting we had to discuss their APP was cancelled because they hadn't prepared an APP. And now we don't have financials either to look at for IDT, but a large portion of our EPWP program is run through the IDT. And they only kicked in, as far as I can recall, in about November last year on their program. So much like this year, they missed about 7 or 8 months of what should have been EPWP interactions. So that's going to have a quite a big impact on the number of work opportunities that the department can state. But at this stage, I'm not too concerned about what we've picked up, but I'm worried that all of this has happened under the sort of guise of COVID, and there's a lot that we are missing. So I do believe that this year going forward, when we start looking at the quarterly reviews and everything, we're going to have to be far more up to speed on what's going on, and we're going to have to interrogate things on a much deeper scale. But aside from that, I would like to just commend our support team on an excellent report. Thanks very much.
Honorable Tring.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I was going to come in after Sharon, but it's fine. Honorable Sharon.
Apologies.
Do you want me to go ahead, Chair?
All right. You may continue. She's going to come in. Honorable Sharon, Honorable Tring.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I also would like to just thank our support staff for just the tremendous amount of effort and work that has been put into to this particular document on the BRRR report. Certainly, I think just my sincere thanks for the effort and the tremendous work that has been put in to this report. Just on my report that was given, page 20, just a question there. It indicated that there were, when looking at the targets, going to page 19, it says that there was actually in the APP 16 targets and a total of actually 15 targets on the annual report. 6 targets were not achieved. However, I think if one looks at, so from page 19 going down to page 20, it says the following 6 performance targets were not achieved, and it goes on to list the 6 that were not achieved. So there's an anomaly between whether it was 16 or 15 or 15 targets, actual targets. 6 were not achieved. And then it goes to the bottom of page 20 and it says the following target was also not reported on. So if we include that, it says if it is not counted, it means that 6 of the 16 were not achieved. Okay, if it's not counted, but if it is included, then we're actually looking at 7. That were not achieved. So I'm not sure then what we are doing in terms of just how we count that. Is it 16? Is it 15? Is it 6 targets not achieved, or is it 7? Because, you know, at the right at the bottom of page 20, it says that achieved 3.6 to 4 of the targeted index score. So I think that there's also a problem that we have then in terms of counting. And then I think just my last comment, Chair, would be in terms of the findings right at the end, whether we should include reports on other, including the Baitbridge border post. Other border posts as well, such as the Coast Debate that we've actually visited, and others where there may actually be problems as well. So I don't know whether we should actually look at including some of the other challenges that we may have at other border posts as well. Thank you, Chair. Those are my comments.
Honourable Van Skalwijk.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. I would like to echo the same sentiment raised by the previous that we've received within a very short period of time. So it's really sterling work that has been done by our support staff. Chairperson, I think majority of the issues that were of concern were captured in the report, but I think we should really try and include our concern or stress, emphasize our concern in terms of the low performance rate of the DPWI, which is 48.6%. Because it is, although there is underperformance and under expenditure of the budget, we need to emphasize our disappointment in the poor performance of the targets. And I've raised it last year during our same PRRR process that we would see that even though this year we see there's under expenditure in terms of the budget, but we'll see that is also not linking when we look at the expenditure of the budget and we look at the performance levels, because the under expenditure of the budget is not more than 40%, for instance, but we look at the targets that has been achieved, it's 48.6%, and that's really a point of concern for me. But also, Chairperson, I think under our observations as well as recommendations, we should emphasize the challenge that we've identified in terms of the staff that's leaving. Because and those are specifically staff in the supply chain area, which give me a red flag, and we need to formalize some kind of recommendation whereby we request the minister to strengthen, not only strengthen enforcement in terms of consequence management, but really look in terms of people exiting the department even way before there's some kind of meow practice or irregularities being identified, because that can also be an indicator of meow practice or irregularities within the different sectors or departments. So if we can formalize something around that issue, it would be appreciated. I think I'll pause there for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Kopane, thank you, Honourable Skalwijk. Honourable Kopane, followed by Honourable Nxumalo, followed by Honourable Hicklin, followed by Honourable Njobo. Honourable Kopane.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. I'm sorry, yesterday I couldn't join. We had a problem with our Wi-Fi here. Chairperson, firstly, I want to congratulate our supporting staff for coming to for compiling this report. Even if I was not there yesterday, but this report is a true reflection of what is happening in the department. I happen to have checked this report, the BBBL report, for the 5th Parliament. Chairperson, I am sorry. It's almost a copy of what has been happening. So it clearly shows that the progress of how things have to change, they are not happening at speed as we wish. So that is also really concerning for me. Having read the findings and the observations, it is really what we've been saying. But what I'm asking, Chair, I think maybe this 6th Parliament, our committee, I think we really have to really indicate that going forward when we start next year, we really have to come up with the monitoring process of what all that we've mentioned, the recommendations, whether we need to demand the progress. Because really this report, when you read about everything, what's been presented to us, it clearly shows that the department is having a problem and nothing is changing, Chair. Because nothing really, Chair, there's no progress. There's only a slight progress there and there. But major problems are still the same. I welcome the report. It's a true reflection of what is happening. What is left for us as members of parliament is to make sure that there is accountability. I hope the minister, she must also do her responsibility on her side, because this report, in a way for me, it also gives a negative reflection. It's affecting the integrity of the minister. I was hoping that being a new minister, she's going to change everything. But it is clear that we are still doing the same thing as we used to do them. But I'm still hopeful at the end of the day that with this committee, if we can put our hands together and make sure that we put pressure, people, they take accountability of what they are doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kupane. Honorable Nkumalo. Honorable Nkumalo. Yes.
Yes, sir. Lankosatlan.
And Wutoshi. I'm expecting you to speak on the report. This is our report, honorable members. That's why I've decided to call each and everyone who's in the meeting.
No, that's why I'm asking, sir, whether are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Oh, that's what I was trying to find out.
We can hear you clearly.
Oh, okay, because I'm in a very awkward space, so... I could not be audible if I had opened my camera. Chair, first one must also commend our team in compilation of the report. I think that it really touches on the happenings of what we've been confronted with. But Chair, I feel that for the two consecutive years, or rather discussing the reports, we've been almost having the same reflections on the report and some improvements on what our PMT is and our key responsibilities. They cannot continue being reflecting the same thing. I think there should be some improvement from what we are reporting in the PRRR next year. But that is not the job of the team. I think we must also try to creep in our hand in terms of accountability and ensuring that we get the eventually the department in order and the PMT is in order. But all in all, Chair, we welcome this report and rest assured you will not find any surprises in the mini plenaries. Hopefully we will not find any surprises in the mini plenaries when these reports have been tabled. And to us, sir.
Honorable Nkumalo, Honorable Hicklin.
Thank you, Chair. Again, Shuaib, Inez, the rest of our support team, you are just beyond amazing. I don't know how to phrase this, and so I'm a little bit concerned. I echo what Honourable Samantha Graham said about everything is being shrouded in the problems of COVID, but COVID is outside of the scope of this particular report. What I think we have to be very, very careful about, and I don't know how to emphasize it more, is that the quality of the data that we input into, whether it's Archivist, whatever software system we have to operate or to run the DPWI, the most important sentence that comes to mind to me is rubbish in, rubbish out. So if the information that is put into the system is not accurate, the information that is then generated from which we actually determine whether leases, monies paid to municipalities, monies paid in terms of the EPWP program, all of this is directly affected because the information that is input is incorrect. And we have to have some way in which the recommendations that we make indicate our need for stronger, for want of another word, data capturing and information input, so that the information that is generated by the system is more credible. That is point number one. Point number two for me is, I think we also need to make a stronger point about the fact that we have to have more red flag systems in place, so that if there is, if Madeleine, for example, inputs information that is incorrect and an invoice is generated that is questionable on Monday, and then the following Tuesday, Madeleine inputs something else that generates another questionable transaction. We have to have more red flags. I don't know how to put this as a recommendation, but somewhere along the line, we have to police the supply chain management a lot more than we actually are. By we, I'm not talking about us as the committee who are actually sitting there, because we aren't. I'm talking about the system itself, the department itself. We need red flags raised before they are raised, because the problem with state funerals didn't happen in 5 days. The problem with the overspending on state funerals happened over a period of time. And if we had identified, we being the Department of Public Works and now the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, if we had identified earlier that we had a leaking sieve in the supply chain management, we wouldn't be in the position that we are in now with these gross, wasteful and fruitless expenditures that are happening. I'm using state funerals, but it's across the board. And so I don't know how to ask for a stronger recommendation or stronger flags to be raised when to identify corruption before it reaches the epic proportions that we have. Because as Truabe said, the consequences of what we are finding now with a DDG who isn't there and we have an acting, and this one isn't there and we have an acting, and this one isn't there and we have an acting, and dirty linen gets washed out in the public domain, when we should stop this at source, as opposed to allowing it to continue as long as it does. I'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you so much.
Honourable Mjobo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okwami nje ukubonga report. I'm covered by Honourable Kobane and Honourable Sharon. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, honourable members. I hope that all those that are here have managed to ask them to speak. If there's any that have not done so, serious apologies. When I looked at the list, it's those honourable members that are in attendance. Honourable Shabalala is not here. Honourable Mashele is in. Honourable Mashele? Honourable Mashele,
thank you,
Chairperson. I am covered. Oh, okay. Thank you, Honourable Mashele. Honourable Mashele was not in yesterday. You could see that. Just a few things on my side. Let me also add my voice in appreciating a well-prepared document. It shows that you didn't sleep. Ever since we started dealing with the reports, you were busy working on them. So that's really, really appreciation from all the members of the committee. We really have an A-team that is supporting us. I think some of the things that I wanted to speak on, they've been covered by you, honourable members. The issue of the state funerals is the one that I picked up, because I don't see it, especially on the issue of the recommendations, as we have done so with the issue of the Bay Bridge. Remember, the issue of the state funerals is something that didn't happen only this year. It has happened in the previous year, red flags were raised and an investigation occurred. So even there, we didn't get the full detailed report of the investigation. So I think we need to have a recommendation that talks on the issue of the state funerals, on the officials that were charged because of that. We need to get a detailed report exactly what is happening. I remember, honorable members, yesterday you raised the issue that we had made some recommendations on the issue of the state funerals, that the amount should be kept at a certain amount, so that whoever does that, it doesn't exceed that. We made certain recommendations. So on the actual report on what you have identified as challenges and the findings, but I think it is this issue of the state funerals Mr. Shuaib, that I didn't see finding EE expression. The issue of the asset register, yes, there is a certain improvement, but I don't think there is a fully fledged asset register that is actually owned by the department. If it had it, we would not have these many challenges that are facing the department of it not even knowing. Remember, when we came in here, all of us from the different political backgrounds, we were talking about many public works and infrastructure buildings that are lying in our respective towns, that some of them are being vandalized. Some of them are being spots for criminals that are there. Some of those buildings, they are still in good conditions, but because there's nothing that is being done. So I think to me, there is still work to be done in terms of the asset register, especially the immovable asset register, because I believe maybe Public Works doesn't know those buildings that we know, that they lie there. I think we even said that Public Works may donate to the respective municipalities. And when we were in, remember when we were in KZN, the mayor of His Worship, the mayor, is it Nkhatshuze? Kabyalinga, but the mayor there told us that there is a land that is lying there of national public works and infrastructure that they would like to utilize, but Public Works is not doing anything on that land. So if there was a clear immovable asset register within Public Works, it would be easy to identify those lands that are lying there, those buildings that are there that are not being utilized. So I want us to something to come up. Yes, there is. We appreciate that. Even as Auditor General, I appreciate that. But there's still more work that has to be done in terms of the asset register. Thank you. Over to you. We'll allow honourable members, if they want a second round, a second bite on some of the issues, maybe they came up when others are speaking, we'll allow honourable members to do so. Over to you, Shuaib.
Chairperson, thank you. I don't know what I should do with this bite you are giving me. Safe to say, Chair, that we've noted the extra issues, especially cleaning up issues around the confusion, I think, that exists around the performance targets that the Honourable Thring raised. That I already started clearing up. The other issues from the members were very useful, Chair. So what we'll do is we are making these amendments as you speak. So if any members want to add more to it, also the matters that you just raised, Chair, is important. And so I started adding the state funerals and the issue of the immovable asset register, so that whatever progress there's been does not give the impression that it is actually a solution, but that there are still weaknesses that need to be addressed. Also the issue that the Honourable Hicklin raised, Chair, and the Honourable Graham, around COVID falling outside of this particular reporting period is important to note. But the important part of the Honourable Hicklin's aspect of monitoring, proactively monitoring how consequence management...
Mr. Shreed, apologies.
Yes,
I made aware that Honourable Maimang wanted to say something.
I was going to say that the importance of the NCOP chair is there, Chair, that we get the provincial perspective. I will pause for that input, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Maimang, you may come in. Apologies for not recognizing you in time. Who is Honourable Maimang now? He's no longer here. I think he has gone. We'll try to link with him again and continue, Honourable York. Continue, Mr. Denzel. Apologies.
This Honourable one, Chair. No, Chair, I was saying that the input of Honourable Hicklin around, you know, having an electronic software system is useful, but it genuinely depends on what you put in. You get out what you put in, it's true. But it's always the capacity of the individuals that work with the system to make the decision of what is valid and what is valuable, rather than using a system to get away with things, because you can do that. So it's all there. It all hinges on the individuals that we appoint. So, Chair, there was another thing that I wanted to just refer to also was, I think the Honourable Van Schalkwyk makes a very important point around the link between the performance targets, which is of course related also to what the Honourable Singh wanted clarity on. If the targets are 38%, but you spent 91% of your budget, then it just doesn't make sense. Then somewhere along the line, there's that what we would call an anomaly is hiding something that will come out only 3 to 4 years later. So that is something that I think must come into findings and observations. Chair, so I think that is really some of the useful stuff that I think we heard. I think Honourable Hicklin's point, I will want to sit a bit and just have quiet time and write on not only a finding but a recommendation that can. I think the recommendation is there, but I think it just needs to be strengthened. Even your input, Chair, on the immovable asset register and the state funerals prestige program. So, Chair, with that said, thank you very much for the input.
Chairperson, may I just come in here in terms of the issue that Honourable Thring raised in terms of the number? It is actually an error. In terms of, it should say 7. What it is that when you look at the department's annual performance plan, they had 16 targets that they reported on for 2019-20 that they planned to implement. However, they left out one of those targets, which is to do with change in the index score for management practices, which they said they plan to have between 3.6 and 4.0 index score for management practices. That is a target that they had planned, but when they reported in the annual report itself, they never mentioned it. So it should say, if you do include that target, then they missed seven. It should read as seven targets that they of the overall 16 then. But what they reported is only on 15 targets. And that is why, apologies, that's where the confusion came in. And the similar issue with the property management trading entity itself, they also missed out on one target. They reported on 43 in their annual report, but when they initially tabled their annual performance plan, they actually had 44. So those are the anomalies that came through in terms of, if you look at the original document tabled in terms of the performance management, in terms of their performance plan, the annual performance plan, and in terms of how they report in the annual report. Thank you.
Honorable Graham Murray, she wanted to make a second bite. Honorable Graham Murray, I think a point that she forgot when she was presenting.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I really appreciate it. Chair, one of my big issues, and it comes up in every single meeting and every time we raise anything with the Minister, she talks about consequence management. This keeps getting, this is like a catch-all phrase that gets bandied about how they're dealing with stuff. But we have no idea what consequence management looks like, what it does, how it's enacted, how it's implemented, what the policies look like. And I think it's something that we need to start pushing more for in terms of how the department is dealing with stuff. So when they keep talking about consequence management, we need to actually get specifics. What does that look like? Are there policies in place? Who is being consequently managed? What are the results of this consequence management? So I do believe that somewhere we need to highlight the fact that we keep getting told there's consequence management in place, but we're not actually seeing any evidence of it. I don't know if it would be prudent to incorporate it into this report, but I do think that we need to, even if maybe going forward, we ask for a meeting where they speak to us about the consequence management program that they've got in place, so that we have some idea of what that actually looks like, instead of it just being a, oh, don't worry, we're dealing with it through the consequence management. Thank you.
Honorable Graham Mares, again, honorable members, we really would like the way that you have commented and enhanced the document presented to us. I wanted to check, Ms. Martinez, earlier on, when are we supposed to be in the mini plenary to debate this?
Chairperson, I wouldn't know. They don't normally give us that information. I don't know what the program entails. I just had a browse through it yesterday. I didn't see this one being factored on, Chairperson. So I can always go and check, but they don't usually give us that information. That's the House business, not ours.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. Just a second, yeah. Bite as well. I raised my hand. I'm not sure if you saw it.
Ah, hey. Okay. There's Honorable Tring's hand. Honorable Tring.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think just two aspects. One was just in terms of the irregular expenditure. I raised the matter yesterday also with regards to the schools. And even though the irregular expenditure that was explained to us may be a virtuous and a noble cause, but irregular expenditure is irregular expenditure. So I don't know whether that, and there's a couple of million with regards to the Auditor General picked up. So besides the state funerals, I think that certainly is the challenge. But there were also other aspects, and one of the big ones that I think we picked up yesterday was on the schools. The second is just with regards to what Honorable Graham Murray indicated with regards to accountability and consequence management. You know, we all supported the so-called newfound teeth that the Auditor General has. So I think in keeping also with the consequence management and what consequence management actually looks like and how it's actually been implemented. And I know that the AG is from the report kind of the third level of accountability. But where also are those teeth, the newfound teeth that the AG actually has in holding senior management to account where certain irregularities are found and continue to be perpetuated year after year? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Trink. Any other member that would like to have a second bite, Honourable Members? I don't want to leave. Honourable Kopane, I see that your mic...
Okay, sorry,
yes.
No, I'm not saying anything.
Your mic is not muted. I hope that maybe you wanted to say something. I think Honourable Members, we through now some of the issues that we have raised will be affected in the report, put it the way that we have suggested it, and then we will then, I don't know whether we have to adopt it now or after we have done the corrections. Jawa?
No, you can go to Shreep first.
Okay. Shreep?
Chairperson, the additions are tweaks on the recommendations and the finding side, which means that the report is I mean, I didn't hear members saying that anything in the recommendations and findings had to be taken away. What I did hear was that there needs to be specificity in terms of irregular expenditure, consequence management, state funerals, as the bait bridge is managed, is mentioned, state funerals is not mentioned, etc. And so it depends on the committee whether the committee wants to adopt with amendments to be made, and we effect the amendments, and by the end of business today, you get that amended report for your processing.
Thank you. I think, Honourable Members, the report is before us. We have considered it. I think we need to have Honourable Member who moves for the adoption of the report with all the amendments that we have presented. Honourable Jabo?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move that the report be adopted with amendments.
Thank you, Honourable Jabo. Honourable Hicklin?
I'll second it.
Honourable Hicklin,
it's adopted with the amendments.
Honourable Hicklin seconds the adoption of the report. Thank you, Honourable Members, for your input and for your deliberations in our report. Ms. Nola, now we move for the minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to flag the minutes of the 10th of November. Trying to get to it. Yes, thanks, Chair. The minutes that are before the Committee for Consideration and Adoption are the minutes of the 10th of November. Where the committee received a briefing by the DPWI on the expenditure on consultants and outsourced services. So I would like the Honourable Members just to zoom into the attendance and see if there's anything that needs to be corrected there. when we receive the presentation, and I'll go to the resolutions, Honorable Chairperson. Okay, so one of the resolutions was that the Minister should accelerate the review of white papers 1 and 2 and complete the draft public works bill. The other one was that the department should submit a detailed report on the 40 professionals that are seconded from the private sector into ISA. And that should be all from my side, Chairperson, on these minutes.
Honourable members, these are the minutes of the 10th of November. Can we have someone who moves for the adoption, as they are the true reflection of what happened at the day?
Chair, there are a couple of spelling and grammatical errors.
Oh, okay, can you zoom on that?
There were two. Missed my eye, but the last one in the recommendations, for there was the word forward was missing an R, and there was another one for a recommendation or a suggestion, and it was listed as an somewhere. I think it was on page 2 or page 3, Nola.
Okay, thank you.
We are noting the amendments, so members can just carry on because I'm not going to fly the amendments now.
Okay, thank you. Then can we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes with all the corrections that Honorable Hicklin has suggested?
I will move for a chair.
Honorable Hicklin, for the adoption of the minutes with the corrections that she has identified. Honorable Njabo seconds the mover. Can you have the second set of minutes?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 11th. Sounds like my minutes are now going. Right.
Are they lost?
They just got lost somewhere, Chairperson, but we have since found them. No, this cannot be. Sorry, Chair, I'm just trying to locate my minutes because I had them open and I don't know what's happening now. Yes, we are good. Yes, here we go, Chairperson. Apologies for that. So this meeting was dealing with the briefing on the PMT's challenges to collect user charges from departments. Again,
Lala?
Yes, Chair?
The minutes that you're showing us are not exactly what you're speaking about, unless we can just look at the document that you sent us. They're not showing on us, they just show edited version, whatever. But again, we do have them, they were sent to us, all our members. If you can look at them, but continue, Nala.
Can you see them?
There they are now.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies again about that. So I was saying this was a briefing by the DPWI on the PMT's challenges to collect user charges from client departments. So again, I'll request the members to just go through their attendance and verify if everything is okay. We'll move along to the presentation. and then the resolutions. Okay, one of the resolutions was that this portfolio committee would engage other portfolio committees that are responsible to conduct oversight on departments that owe accommodation charges to the DPWI. The second one was that before the end of November, the DPWI should have a meeting with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services to resolve the issue of non-payment. Thirdly, before the end of 2020, there should be a meeting between DPWI and the National Treasury to gain insight on how to recoup the debt owed to the department. And lastly, the committee should have a meeting with the Standing Committee on Finance, beginning of the first term of 2021, to assist the department to recoup the debt owed by other departments. That should be all from my side, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Honourable members, these are the minutes of the meeting we had last week. I will then invite members to correct the minutes and then move for the adoption of the minutes as the true reflection of what happened on the 11th of November. May I have a mover, please?
Chairperson, I move the adoption of the minutes and amendments.
Honourable Mjobo, which correction is now Honourable Mjobo? Honourable Mjobo moves for the adoption of the minutes. May I have a second, please? Honourable members?
I will move, Chair. I just feel uncomfortable about moving on minutes for a meeting I wasn't in. That's the only problem.
No, you're not supposed to do so. I would second. Okay, Honourable Trin, second the adoption of the minutes of the 11th of November. Thank you, Ms. Nola. I think we're through now, no?
Yes, Chair, we are through with the two sets of minutes. The two sets of minutes of the meetings that were held this week will be adopted next week. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Any announcements?
There's just one announcement, which is a reminder, Chairperson, that we are getting a briefing from the department next week on the 24th of November on the expropriation bill. So that's when the department will be briefing us on the actual bill. And I think, Chair, but this will be also run through MENCO, that's the same meeting in which we should be adopting the motion of desirability for the bill. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Remember, we deliberated not on the actual bill, but on the process to follow as the committee. But now we're going to be briefed properly as the committee. I just want to make you aware that there is much interest for South Africans for this bill to see the light of the day. Remember, we're still using the Act of 1976 or 5 when it comes to expropriation. That Act, it doesn't talk to the current constitution that we have. So we must read the bill so that when it's presented to us, we then interact and engage on it progressively as we usually do. And again, Honourable Members, I really appreciate the way you engage, your robust engagements in our committee. Yenza ikomitiye to imenomdla kakhulu to anyone who is out there watching our deliberations and the way we behave and the way we treat each other in our meetings is something that we need to keep it moving forward in this administration. Thank you again to our support team. It is really our A team. Iyasincedisa kakhulu. If we have no other announcements, all our members,
our honourable member, honourable Graham Murray, I think she is getting well, and we're so proud. Today she was even able to engage. Yesterday she couldn't because she has not been feeling well. One of the things that this virtual meeting have assisted us, even if you are not well, you are able to participate in the meeting. Thank you again, honourable members, and our A team. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Bye, colleagues, for now.
Thank you. Bye.